on RadioRegent.com. We're a volunteer-run community station, and we want your help. To pitch us a show, give us your feedback, or offer to help, call 647-344-4134. Radio Regent, the voice of your community.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
Welcome to Catch the Flavor Youth Radio here on Radio Regent. We'll be right back after this musical break.
Another edition of Catch the Flavor Youth Radio here on Radio Regent. We are a youth-led radio show that focuses on health and wellness issues, as well as social justice in our community and abroad. We are based in Regent Park within Toronto. So welcome. Now that the winter is here, it is officially the holiday season. That's a ton of ways to celebrate the holiday season, like skating, sightseeing, holiday shopping. But in our community, the Regent Park Community Food Center is celebrating the holiday season with a winter market, happening on December 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. The festivities will be held at the CRC, located at 40 Oak Street. There will be unique gifts, amazing food, wood oven baked pretzels, gingerbread decoration, raffles, and live music. Today we have Cavell Hart with us. She is the part of planning committee for the winter market and here to tell us more about the event and festivities. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
So what is the timeline for opening day and for the upcoming festivals?
So our winter market will start at 5 o'clock, but it's actually taking place in two locations. Mm-hmm. So we want people to start out at the big park, which is right on Dundas.
Yeah.
And we'll have our bake oven going, and they're making fresh hot pretzels for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then we would like to take everyone back to 40 Oak Street to enjoy the rest of the marketplace, which will be inside 40 Oak Street mm-hmm. at 5 o'clock. And we'll run until probably 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Until we run out of everything.
So is everything free of charge? The pretzels are free to...
The pretzels are actually made by a group called the Friends of Regent Park. So they're charging $1 a pretzel. Mm-hmm. But they're ginormous pretzels.
Right.
But when you come back to 40 Oak Street into the indoor market, I'm personally going to be making some pretty tasty soup. Yeah. Some sweet potato, red lentil coconut soup with a little kick in it, but that's going to be free for all vendor goers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other activities for the children, which is also free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we want to make sure we have a mix of both.
What are some of the events for the children?
It's going to be fantastic. I don't know if you've ever been in 40 Oaks, but we have a beautiful space called the worship space that anyone can come and use for, obviously, worship purposes. But we'll be using it that night and have a movie playing on the wall for the children mm-hmm. while they decorate gingerbread cookies.
Oh, yes.
So that's also the Friends of Regent Park will have made the gingerbread cookies for us,
mm-hmm.
and that's all free. The kids come in led by some fantastic volunteers and going to show them how to decorate up their cookies, and then, of course, they get to take those home afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So what do you know what movie you will be playing?
Maybe we can decide tonight, actually, because we're trying to decide between Frosty the Snowman, classic, yeah. or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
But what about The Grinch Stole Christmas?
I don't, because we have such young kids, I wonder, do you think it might
scare
some of them?
That's true.
Even though I expose my children to it.
It's a holiday classic.
It is. Oh, now we're going to have to add that to the mix. I don't know.
Continue.
I was just going to say maybe we could get some listener feedback on what they think would be the best movie for us.
Yeah.
Right.
So what are some unique vendors you would like to highlight?
Wow. Everyone, actually. So a lot of the vendors are the same vendors that we had at Taste of Regent Park in the summer.
Oh, yes.
That came back and wanted to keep on selling mm-hmm. and grow their own business because they are entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So an example, we have one lady, Murshida, who sells scarves and pashminas.
Yeah.
And she has an incredible selection. And in the summer, of course, they were lightweight for the summer, but now she's ordered in some winter stock, a beautiful and high-quality shawls. And then we have a really unique group called Jubilee Designs, and they're a youth group out of Yonge Street Mission that are a design group. And they, I call it upcycling. They used you know, found or used items to make new accessories like pins and boutonnieres and scarves and tote bags. So it's all led youth group, and they make it. So that's going to be another one of our vendors. Do you want me to tell you some more?
Yes. Is there jewelry involved?
Pardon me?
Any jewelry?
Yes, of course. I think someone may be interested in jewelry. We actually have a fantastic group, and they're called Love Lilith. And they are, again, Regent Park residents, and they were with us all summer at Taste of Regent Park and built up quite a following. They sell jewelry that they use semi-precious stones and very unique designs. And if you check our Facebook page, Taste of Regent Park, I've been highlighting different vendors every couple of days, so you can see some of their work up there and, you know, pre-look at all this stuff. So Love Lilith. We have another group from YSM, and they're called Illuminate, and they're a group of residents who got together and made a business of making candles, but they're soy-based candles, and they're gorgeous, and they've made some for us in different colors, because usually they were white in the summer, but now they've made some, you know, funky colors to sell. So they'll also be at the market. Want me to keep on going? Should we talk about food?
Yes.
Of course, we should talk about food, right?
Winter food.
We'll have a produce table, because that was part of the reason why the Regent Park Market was started, was to make sure that we had access to good, healthy, affordable food for people, and it grew since there. But we will always have our produce table. And what I'm doing for this one is, I thought, if I'm selling the or giving away the soup for everyone to try, maybe they're going to want to make it at home.
Yeah.
So we're selling all the ingredients at our produce table and giving out recipe cards so that people can buy it, take it home, and make it themselves afterwards. And then we have local caterers. And these ladies fed me all summer long. So delicious. So they're community caterers who are very good cooks. And some of them provided the community meal we would have in the summer. And others just had vendor booths where they sold their own food. So we had things like Sultana is famous for her samosas.
Yeah.
And she makes vegetarian and I think chicken and beef samosas. And then we had Patricia, who sold out every week her famous doubles. I didn't have a double before this summer. And then I had one.
I had one in the summer. It was amazing. I didn't even know what a double was.
I never had a double. What's a double?
Yeah,
what? Can you,
I don't know what the culture is. I don't know which.
Jamaican, Trinidadian.
Yeah. It's like a pita. It's like a little soft taco.
Yeah.
Full of amazingness.
Oh my god.
It was, and it was vegetarian. I'm a vegetarian, so I can't eat a lot. And it was just so amazing. They're just these tiny little babies of of heaven.
Like the size of the palm of your
hand. Yeah.
I actually think I've had one.
Yeah.
There's pictures on the Facebook page. Or no. I'm putting it up tomorrow. Patricia's going up tomorrow.
That's all the more reason to go.
Really, so you can have a double. And the hot sauce that goes with it.
And served with two, right? That's why it's called double?
Doubles. You have to have two. How could you eat one of those?
Yeah.
I'll share a secret, which isn't going to be one anymore. But at the end of the Taste of Regent Park, I would go home super tired because it's a pretty long day.
Yeah.
And I had a bag of goodies from all the beautiful vendors that would feed me every week.
Wow.
And I would just stand at the counter and just eat those doubles in like 2 seconds flat by the end of the night. Perfect way to end the day.
They're just like two bites. They're so good.
They're good.
So how long did it take to plan everything and put everything together?
For the winter market?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the great thing is the winter market is... The Taste of Regent Park used to only be during the summer.
Yeah.
And at the end of the summer, we were pretty excited to find out that we got funding to expand Taste of Regent Park to a year-round event.
Oh,
so this is our first event following that decision.
Oh, okay.
So to be honest, we're not quite sure exactly what each market is going to look like, but yeah. we're working on that now. Mm-hmm. And this is our first go. And we're always looking. We want to work with the community and find out, what do they want? It's their mm-hmm. market, right?
Yeah.
So this is just the first one to just kind of kickstart everything again and get some community engagement going and saying to people, you know, it's not only the summer anymore. We're continuing it year round. So in answer to your question, how long did it take? I guess I've been planning since the end of the summer taste of Regent wow. Park till mm-hmm. now. So that's my job, is to kind of research and find out what people want and to plan this next event. But having said that, the next one that we have isn't going to be like this one either. Hmm. We want to change it up, each one outside of the summer markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You kind of asked my question that I was going to ask you.
Oh,
after.
Sorry.
It's okay. How do you, you know, get the feedback for what people want
right.
for the next market?
Exactly.
How would you go about doing that?
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to figure out. a lot of is just actually I've been visiting people. I've been talking to people. We have surveys. Mm-hmm. We post things on our social media and ask questions and try to get feedback that way.
Yeah.
Before people left the market at the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had close relationships with all the vendors by then and
yeah.
found out that they didn't want it to end.
Mm-hmm.
So we really pushed to try and continue the market. So that's one way that we find out what people want. And also we call information sessions at 40 mm-hmm. Oak Street and get people to come who are interested and want to have their say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So will there be any other events like this happening in Regent Park?
Yes. I think the next one we're going to do is going to be in February. And that one will be a true winter market.
Yeah.
It's going to be outside.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it's got to be outside.
Did we lose you?
I want it to be back in the park and to really animate the park again. And like, we have such long winters
mm-hmm.
instead of like being inside and binge
yeah.
watching, which is okay too.
Yeah.
I want it to celebrate more of the holiday and winter time.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a few plans, nothing solidified yet, but I've been collecting hockey sticks from people, and I wouldn't mind getting a big, huge game of just street hockey going in the park.
Ah.
No skates, no ice, but just ball, stick, couple nets, and just engaging all the youth and adults, if they mm-hmm. want to come out and have some fun. We'll have the bake oven going. We might have some warming stations. In
hot chocolate,
freezing.
Apple cider.
Apple cider. I like how you put in those little comments. Apple cider, hot chocolate, you know, things like that to keep us warm. But it's really to try and celebrate the mm-hmm. the season and the weather instead of just being upset about it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Good.
February is my birthday month and I don't know how to skate. So like, I never play hockey. But
oh,
that
so
sounds
you
amazing.
Play hockey, but
I play
skating.
Hockey, but I can't skate. I haven't been skating in a while, so I
so
don't
so
know.
So not ice hockey, but
no.
So you'll be there?
Yes.
Okay.
With my siblings and
hey,
everybody.
Good.
Sounds like so much fun.
Good, thanks. I'm excited too. I'm gonna get my sons to come and help out with the hockey game as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever else wants to come.
So is there anything else you would like to add before you go?
I guess really something that we're trying to do with the Taste of Regent Park Holiday Market is also, you know, we have a revitalized community
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to, you know, make everyone feel included in the community. And I think these kinds of events does that.
Yeah.
It brings everybody out so they can meet each other and get to know each other. And we saw that in the summer. It happened
mm-hmm.
by having these kind of very public events.
Yeah.
So we're trying to continue that. But something that we're also trying to do, because these vendors, as I said earlier, are entrepreneurs, they're business owners. We would like to advertise farther afield than Regent Park to get people to come and see what's going on here, to see
mm-hmm.
the incredible artists that we have. We didn't even talk about the musicians. We have a live band playing at the market as well. So as soon as you walk in, live music by a band called 40 Oaks. Mm-hmm. And so we're just trying to spread the word further and get more people to come and experience the magic. I always say there's a magic that happens in Regent Park.
Yes.
There's something about this community, mm-hmm. and I want people to come and check it out.
So I just want to clarify, is it just a one-day event?
This one is.
Okay.
And we plan to have the ones that are not in the summer, like, a, you know, we'll have, this is the holiday, we'll do a winter, and then hopefully a spring, mm-hmm. and then we'll kick it right back into every Wednesday during the summer.
Okay.
So, but like, as I said, we're still incubating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate all comments and ideas. Let us know. I don't know if you have information where people can get in touch if they wanted to participate in any way.
Yeah, we'll have more information on our blog.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So that would be exciting. We're really hopeful that people come out because it's only one day. We've got one shot, so got to make it, you know, work.
That's right.
So that's all the time we have for this portion of the show. We'd like to thank Cavell for being in studio today and talking about the winter market happening in Regent Park. Again, it will be for next week, December 7th, from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It will be at 40 Oak Street, which is the CRC. And please stay tuned right after our musical break. We will have Diamond hosting our panel discussion talking about police presence in neighborhoods.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us for Health Talks on Catch the Flavor Youth Radio here on Radio Regent. I'm your host for the rest of the night, Diamond. As a police officer, you'll work in partnership with the communities you serve to maintain law and order, protect members of the public, their property, prevent and reduce the fear of crime, and improve the quality of life for all citizens. But yet many communities across Toronto and many across Canada feel as if many officers are doing the exact opposite of this. Regent Park sadly has a history of violence, and because of this history, those that live within this community, especially youth, are subjected to stereotypes and misconceptions. Thus, today we will discuss the interactions of youth and police. Welcome, panel discussion. So what are your experiences and perspectives of police interactions with youth, whether you have an experience with them or you know somebody that's had experience, whether positive or negative?
For me, it was a positive because, like, I still remember, I think it was, like, last year, I was stopped by a cop that they were just asking, like, for ID and mm-hmm. just asking, like, interviews, like, did you get into this fight or whatever. But they were really nice. They were,
yeah.
As long as you're honest with them, you know, things will do very well. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, like they say, the truth will set you free. So
mm-hmm.
they're good, like. I think they're good people, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Joel?
Wow. There's good and bad in every badge.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got stopped by the police, but I know a lot of guys who have.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I don't agree with some of the things they do.
Yeah.
A lot of the things they use is illegal force.
Mm-hmm.
Prime example, what I'm talking about is Rodney King.
Yeah, remember that.
Rodney King.
The riot.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they stopped him and they beat him down like a dog.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He died recently.
Yeah, and he died recently. But that, for me, will stick out in my mind for, like, police brutality.
Did he even do anything?
No.
Nothing.
They stopped him.
Stuff.
Really? Yeah. Oh, well.
They stopped him for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my opinion, that's the reason why. There's a lot of other incidences that I don't exactly agree with police tactics, but that's just one of them.
Mm. Erica, do you have an experience with the police, whether positive or negative?
No.
No? Well, I haven't either, but being in a large family, I've seen it happen before my eyes, not necessarily towards me. My younger brother, he actually just turned 17. So he looks older than his age. He's pretty tall. So he looks like, you know, a man.
A troublemaker?
You can say that too. You know, sometimes you can say the people he hangs with are not the mm-hmm. right crowd. Yeah. Not saying that he goes about the same things that they do. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But just because that he hangs out with a certain people, yeah. he gets labeled. Mm-hmm. And even when it's just me and him and we're walking, it could be in the day or at night, mm-hmm. I've seen him interact with like police officers that seem like shifty in a way that we're here, we're in a certain area at a certain time. Like, okay, here's an example. Like, so the security officers at Freshco, I go there well often because I have a big family. So, you know, I'm always constantly grocery shopping. But I remember this one time, me and my brother went to go grocery shopping, and the security guard was following us the entire time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and, you know, sadly, I don't want to say this, but I feel like it's common because it's happened to me and my brother before, whether it's me or my brother. People look at us a certain way because we're black. I don't know. Maybe it's the area that we live in that I feel like has a factor in it, but we found it odd because he sees us come here all the time. And what also made it odd is he was also black.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he had pressure to, like, target certain people?
I don't.
Like, because of thefts that were happening in the city and stuff? Yeah,
it could be that. Like, honestly, I don't feel like I was targeted in any way. I was just, like, the man's doing his job. And also because even though I was born in Regent Park and I've lived here for most of my life, it's weird, like, we ourselves, like, the people that live in the community feel like, you know, this is a normal thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't want it to be a normal thing. Mm-hmm. That we just, you know, oh, he's also from here, so you should be careful because this place is deemed as violent and such.
They said the exact same thing about Jade and Finch, too, in the
90s. Yeah.
They've been saying that from time still.
They've been saying that for years.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's weird because I know that Regent Park is more than what the media portrays it, but then in a way we've been so brainwashed to think what Regent Park is. Yeah. I feel like I still see like in it about like I've soaked in all the things that they said,
yeah,
that
just
the
too
media
much stereotypes.
Yeah, and yeah. It's kind of sad to see as a person that lives in Regent Park to reflect those stereotypes and misconceptions.
Yeah,
and
like
I just can't get negativity. Baffled sometimes.
It's always negative.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Do you guys ever experience things like that?
Yeah.
All the time.
Can you guys give an example?
Like downtown, mm-hmm. A lot of people say it's dangerous, but when you're actually downtown, sometimes it's not like that dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's different for everyone, though, but still, it's to me, it's still safe because like I've been there so many times. I mean, we're downtown right now, and
mm-hmm.
seems okay. Like I'm used to it. Like safe.
Yeah.
The only time I had an interaction with authority was I was traveling by myself, and I had a stopover in Detroit
mm-hmm.
airport, and I am 5'2", small Asian girl that looks like she's 16, really don't look like trouble at all. And some guy, I think this was just after, was during the Bush administration, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of like huge security protocol against people just to heighten security and fear and everything.
Yeah.
And I was just passing through. I literally had no business in Detroit. My flight was just, you know, I just had to wait for my next flight at Detroit Airport. And I was trying to find my way into the terminal, and then I saw a security guard, and he was just like, oh, what are you doing here? And I thought he was just being curious or something, because I've never experienced it in Canada. I experienced it in the States. I thought he was just talking to me. Because, you know, the sense of fear in Canada is not as much as in America.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, can you come over here with me for a second? And then all the security guards, they, like, opened up my suitcase and looked through everything and, like, pulled everything out and stuff. Yeah. And at one point, I was just, like, just looking at this, and then eventually, I just got so annoyed. I was like, what are you doing? Like, this mm-hmm. is so insane. This is legitimately insane. Do you honestly think that I would do something, right? Or, like, I was, like, I don't know how you are trained in your profiling of people, but how mm-hmm. could you ever think that I was a suspect, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that, they just kind of they didn't find anything, and they're like, okay, you can put your stuff back together. And they left this huge mess, like all my luggage just strewn out, and they just left it there for me to put back together. And, you know, when you travel, sometimes you got to stuff things in, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to, like, put it all back together. So that was my experience with that. So I understand when people say that they have these unfair experiences with police presence.
Yeah. I've never experienced travel like that because I don't travel often, but that's actually one of my biggest fears, like, based on all, like, whether it's like movies or even like the, you know, documentaries when they're talking about like racial profiling, all that stuff, and how, especially now, like, even though with the travel ban, I don't think the travel ban will affect me, I don't know, I don't travel, but that's actually one of my biggest fears, like, going through that, especially when that time where they were talking about how they had new technology to, like, instead of a pat down and all that stuff, they had new technology to see, you know, what if you have certain things on you.
Those experiences are a little dehumanizing. It was a little, like, I'm not a person who embarrasses too easily, but even I was a little, like, I felt a sense of humiliation. Like, I was like, what are you, like, it's, like, there's some breach of privacy. Like, I felt like they just stepped a boundary there, overstepped a boundary. It just didn't feel like this was within your rights or even something that a person with good intentions would ever do.
Yeah.
Like, it felt almost like they've got this really strong sense of authority about things, and they were really abusing that power.
Mm. So do racialized people experience significantly more police stoppages than non-racialized? Or has it become more than just a race and more on the means of the community?
That's an interesting question. Well, I know I have a lot of friends, acquaintances, young black men who always tell me about their unfair experiences with the police. And there's this one man I knew. He spoke about how when he was 12, he was stopped by the police, and they wanted to search him. And, you know, he's 12, right? Like, how can you? I've never heard that from other friends, so I don't know if that's a race. And he's actually not from Regent Park.
Yeah,
he's from a well-off community. So I don't know. Like, sometimes I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
Like, if it's not your community, then it's gonna be your race.
Well, personally, I agree with you, Judy, because there's been times where I've realized that sometimes it does have to do with race, but lately I've realized that it's now become more than race rather than just, you know, what people think, police officers are targeting, you know, people of different ethnicities. I realized, like, even if you're in Regent Park and you live in Regent Park, they still target people that live within the community because of its history, not just Regent Park, other places like Jane and Finch, like you're saying, and other things. So I feel like it's more than just what we thought, you know, the stereotypes of police just target black people because of this and that. I think people that just think about that, like, just like think that it's just black people, are ignorant in the way that it's more than just that now. You know, how Canada is a multicultural place, and it's more than just one race. Now it's more than just a couple races. It's gone deeper than that.
Yep.
Media plays a huge factor in this as well. Mm-hmm. Music, TV.
The States, mostly.
The States, huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like, take the, if you ever saw the movie Straight Outta Compton, that's exactly what I'm talking about. NWA, they started off as, I think, I'm not quite sure how the movie goes, but they were stopped by the police numerous amount of times.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And they were beat down. Same thing. The young people, they take that image, as the bad boy image, and put it in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So my thing is, let the parents get involved, talk to them, and then go from there, I guess. Right? So I know you could get stuck by the police, but it will, I guess, soften the blow, I guess. I'm not quite sure. If you want to stop me now, feel free.
I noticed that in the States, it's a lot different. Because, like, when they target you, it's different, if you're like a different race, right? Say, mm-hmm. I'm just saying you're black, and then they stereotype you as a thief.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And they will like beat you down. But here in Canada, it's like a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
They would probably just question you. And
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. Like, you were talking about community versus race.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because I was in the Detroit airport.
Yeah.
Like, Detroit has such a bad history of crime and stuff. And someone like me getting stopped, maybe there is something to be said when it comes to community.
Mm-hmm. So, during, you know, with this, the recent incidents of, like, you know, the police brutality in America, you know, with Trayvon Martin and other people or victims such that have gone through police brutality, do you think that Canada has become more aware of this?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, even though they became more aware of it, do you think that it's over-exaggerated because of what's happening in America?
I don't think it's something that's over-exaggerated. I think they're just telling it as it is. It just depends on whose narrative it is.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends. Like, there's even a case right now of Sami Yateem, the guy that was shot
mm-hmm.
multiple times on the streetcar, right?
Yeah.
When you look at it from the officer's perspective, you could say, okay, well, this kid, he had mental illness problems. He was waving a weapon around, scaring people. Or when you look at it from the kid's perspective, you could think, okay, this is just a kid who is from an immigrant family, by the way. Mm-hmm. He has mental illness. He has this weapon, but you don't know what's going on in his head. You don't know how he got to that point. So I think it just depends on whose side it is. I think Canada, we should talk more about relationships with community members and with the cops, and not just depend on, and not just be like, okay, well, this happened in Jane and Finch, or this happened in this region or region park, so this is just how it is. There needs to be a more open dialogue.
Mm-hmm. So do you think experiences with the police contribute to delinquency involvement with criminal behavior if they're negative, you know, experiences?
Yeah, I do. I think it is negative because when you're young, you're impressionable. I always say this to people that when, I don't know if this happened for any of you, but when I was in kindergarten, they used to bring in the cops and basically tell us that,
yeah,
you know, we're the good guys. We're the guys that'll protect you. If you're in trouble, down 911.
Mm-hmm.
They used to beat that into our heads. So now when you're young and you go through something criminal and you're not really sure what's happening, and the police that tell you that we're there to protect you treat you in this negative way, your whole perception of authority changes.
Mm-hmm.
And you react negatively. So yeah, I think you will be delinquent, you will be rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the one institution that says we will protect you doesn't protect you, then where can you go? So you have to protect yourself, and by any means necessary, even if those means are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, it also really depends on the officer, because some officers
are... Yeah, of course.
Because
I don't want to say that all officers are bad.
Yeah.
They're generally good officers that do their jobs and basically serve and protect to heart and mean it.
But just sometimes they just make the wrong decisions.
Yeah, I agree.
I think sometimes
they make the wrong decisions, though? Because in that moment, it's kind of like... I agree to a certain extent that they can make wrong decisions, but again, in your training, there's no error for wrong decisions, right? They train you in a certain way to handle certain situations. They're even saying now that instead of someone to draw their weapon or for someone to have a gun, they should use more de-escalation tactics to handle things instead of things going haywire. So I don't know. I guess it depends on what part of your training you use.
Mm-hmm. Judy, were you going to say something?
Oh, I forgot.
So, Joel, I knew you were going to say something. You're sounding real quiet there. I'm going to make you talk today. What do you feel about the topic?
so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, number one, yes, the police are here for the community, first and foremost. And it says that right in their badge, to serve and protect the community.
Mm-hmm.
We're taxpayers. That's their job, to serve and protect us. Mm-hmm. It's basically how I figure they're protecting and throwing their employer in prison, if you kind of really think of it like that. It's our tax dollars that employ them
mm-hmm.
each and every day. And if we're going to a school and telling the kids, and basically, I'm going to go on record for this, lying to the kids, oh, we're going to protect you, we're going to help you. You're not protecting anyone. You're doing use of force, but it's not to serve and protect, it's by your own egos.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them do it by their own egos. And most of them, they judge first, ask questions later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, and mostly the black community. So I figured it like this. It's more training, more psychological training for the police, too.
Yep.
And more physical training, too, because a lot of people have also mental health issues.
Exactly.
Like Sammy Yatim.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Did on that streetcar. You think if that cop went in there and said, you know what? Oh,
if he was trained to handle situations,
exactly.
That he wouldn't have felt the need to draw his weapon and shoot all those times.
He would have calmed him down, whatever, and said, you know what? I'm here to help you.
De-escalated that.
Exactly.
I think,
and shooting him? That's murder, yeah. Period.
Yeah, I think the officer probably taken more advantage of the situation.
Exactly. Yep.
Instead of, you know, doing it in a reasonable way. Because, like, this person's young and
right.
He, officer, is probably just empowering more power.
Exactly.
Yeah,
as if they're God.
Right.
So.
What's the consequences for these officers doing this crime? That's my question.
To be determined.
Exactly. And some of these officers, when they shoot first, ask questions, they get paid for it.
Mm.
Is that all what they want? It's the paycheck? There has to be a consequence.
There won't mm-hmm. be, though.
So, what impact does policing have on the community? Overall, do you believe that the police do a good job keeping the community safe? Whether it be Regent Park or the community that you live in?
I think some officers do that,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think, I'm not, well, it's my opinion, I don't think all officers do that, but they should be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I concur.
It's a coin flip, in my opinion. Heads, they do, tails, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 50-50 chance with me. So basically, I'm on the borderline.
Do you want to elaborate?
Meaning...
So I have a question for you, Joel. Does it change for you because you're a young black male? Like, does your perception change because of what your social location is? You're a young black male.
Do you ever get
male?
Afraid
yeah.
of the police?
That's what I'm asking you.
I'm going to say yes and no.
Because all the horror stories you hear about young black men.
Yeah.
Like,
wasn't there a time where...
There's a part of you that's like, that could be me next.
Yeah, like, wasn't there a time where a lot of things were happening to... black youth mm-hmm. walking, you know, during the night.
Yes, it does scare the hell out of me, but I always remember this. It's the company that I keep.
Mm.
Right? I always remember this.
Yeah.
You keep good company, you're going to get good back, right? Positive and positive, right? It's like electric charges. They go together. Negative can go over positive. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it scares the hell out of me.
It's just like for me as a woman, I'm scared to walk at night because, you know, with this whole Weinstein thing, sexual assault's coming out,
mm-hmm.
you can be attacked anytime. So for me as a woman, I'm aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a black person, I believe that officers do a good job. Again, there are officers who are genuinely passionate about their job, generally made the effort to get to know community members, not just on a, you know, officer
right?
level, but like on a name-to-name, hey, how you doing, how's your family doing type level,
mm-hmm.
to just build that trust, right?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. you need that. No trust, no relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think for me what it is, I still get anxiety And then when I read about these horror stories, I think, oh God, one day I have a kid. I'm going to have a kid. And then I'm going to have to sit my child down and tell them, okay, what the police is telling, when they come to your school, don't believe anything because it's lies.
This is why it's
the scary part.
Yeah, this is why it's like it's so important to get to know your police and your community and what they like tend to do. Mm-hmm. So you will like get the idea that how protective they are, or like you'd get to know them, like whether they're being true or fake or.
Mm-hmm.
Who has time to build that kind of relationship with police?
Definitely dedicated to do that on both sides. It's true. Who has the time? Because mm-hmm. they're going from one call to the next. But
mm-hmm.
and you know the thing, from my experience, I worked in for a Caribbean newspaper, so sometimes I interview mothers.
Yeah.
They have sons in jail and stuff, and they were very reasonable when they talked about the experience. They'd be like, I know my son did something wrong. I'm not denying that, and that's why he's in prison. But the way they treat him in prison, the unfair way, like, I'm not saying that he should be let out because he did something and he needs to face the consequences of that. But she's noticed that for him, being in prison, he would experience more abuse, more like deprivation of privileges, or like, you know, and from his like Caucasian counterparts. So that was one of the things that was really interesting to me, because it didn't seem like, you know, like this mother is like so blind in her mother's love to like so always defend him. She just wants justice, right? From his side and from the police side. So she wanted her son to, you know, fulfill, like, she wanted her son to fulfill his duty to society, but she also wanted the police to honor the fact that he still is a human being.
Respect his rights.
Like what Erica was saying about knowing police, even like, you know, name to name basis. Like as you were saying that, I felt more calm. Or like, you know how they have that connection? Like, oh hey, Bill, how are you? How is your family? Like that connection makes you more safe. And I feel like at one point it was like that in Regent Park, or maybe just because like you were saying how back then, you know, the police officers used to come and, you know, talk. And I totally remember that as a kid. I'm not sure if they still do that, but I totally remember. And seeing the same police officers' faces talk about it, you know, and seeing them next year and be like, oh, Diamond, how are you doing? How's your family? And all that stuff. Just saying that makes me feel more safe. And me having, you know, two younger brothers and one being old enough to walk on the street by himself, even when he goes, like, you know, I don't see him for a while and he's out at night, like, I feel worried. Like, there was an incident on Friday, I think it was a couple months ago, where he was going to the store, I think. Yeah, he said he was going to the store, but he ended up doing something else. Like, he saw his friends and he ended up, you know, doing something else. And me being the protective sister I am, I was worried. It was like 11 something at night. And I was like, oh my gosh, where is he? Is he okay? And I even went to do the most and go outside and look for him. Like I've never felt scared for him like that in a long time. But the funny thing is, I myself, when I walk on the road at night in Regent Park, I don't feel scared. It's weird. Cause I feel like, even though I hear the media talk about how dangerous it is, I've been here for so long, and I know the people here, that I know that I won't get hurt. My mom has lived here all her life. My grandmother has lived here all her life. So we know the people in Regent Park. Like, we are friends. They know that I'm my mother's daughter, so they look out for me. Even if it be like, oh, is that Diamond I see down there? Don't mess with her, you know? She's, like family, there is a sense of community, and I feel like
it really does take a village.
Yeah, like people don't understand. Like, yeah, even though this happens, there's outside factors that happen. Like, not everything, just because it happens in a certain area doesn't mean that that area creates it.
Yeah.
You know, there's, they can be from, you know, like Spadina and something, or like, you know, Forest Hill
everywhere.
And anywhere, and come and just have it partakes in that area. And I feel like the media forgets that, just, you know, forgets that there's other factors than Regent Park or other what deemed dangerous communities that we produce a certain, like, you know, atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this revitalization has, you know, even though it's given Regent Park more light, a lot of people are trying to, you know, destroy this, you know, violence and hatred that they say that resides in Regent, but they're also forgetting that there's lots of love here, you know? Like Erica was saying, it does take, a community to raise a child, and that's exactly, that's the problem. That's who I am. I'm a child raised by Regent Park. Yeah. I know a lot of people here, people know me, and I feel like, I kind of sound like I'm preaching, you know, Regent. But, like, I'm really passionate about it because, you know, going through revitalization and going out of Regent Park and, like, even being in, I've had a time where I was in high school and I was in an anthropology, psychology, sociology class. And for sociology, there was a time where they're actually showing a documentary about Regent Park, and the funny thing is the day that they showed in class was the day that I was moving back to Regent Park, so I wasn't there that day to watch the film because I was moving back, right? So I came the next day and I told my teacher, right? And he found out that I was moving back there, and I came back the next day and they had a discussion on it. Of course, my teacher told everybody that I'm actually moved back to Regent Park, so I'm the perfect candidate to talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, it's fine, like, I love where I come from and all that stuff, but I realized even in a lot of places, even Scarborough where I went, which is, that school seemed like it catered a lot of, you know, middle class, higher class people, you know, a lot of what they call rich white students that are privileged. All the stereotypes they had for Regent Park is exactly what you see in media. You know, they're brainwashed.
Exactly.
You know,
I agree. Yeah.
There's a certain student that was debating that people that live in Regent Park are just on welfare. You know, they just take, you know, advantage of welfare. There's 5, 7, 8, 9, like 15 people living in one house.
It sounds like they're always focused on the negative things.
They are. And I was right behind her. And I'm one of those people that think before they talk.
Yeah.
Or I just don't talk at all because I'm emotional. I'd rather not talk and just feel it inside. So the teacher knew I was feeling a certain way. And some people in my class knew, like, I'm friends with, so they know where I'm from. Yeah. So I was really upset that she only knows of the things what media tells her. And of course, my teacher's like, well, a class, you know, we have somebody that actually moved back. And I felt like I had to advocate so hard because,
like, you were put on the spot.
Yeah, like, I was mad at her, not as a person, but, like, just the fact that, you know, society, yes.
Society gave
like
her.
What society gave,
right?
Yes. Because I was like, you're forgetting that all you know is what the society tells you. Mm-hmm. There's more than that. Have you actually walked in Regent Park? Mm-hmm. Have you actually talked to the people?
Right.
Have you actually talked about what they go through? There's more than just that.
Yeah.
There's more than just people that just live on welfare. We are hardworking people. How are you trying to get, like, you know, out of metro housing that when our income goes up, they just raise up the income to how much we make? How are we supposed to go beyond that where these certain factors are pressing us down?
Yeah, it's like, don't judge a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like I had to advocate, like, I was an advocate for Regent Park, like, you know, in my whole school. But, like, examples like that, I realized that this media has a hold, society has a hold of people too strong, like a big brother figure, you know? And I feel like they saw, like, I didn't see the documentary. Till this day, I don't know what the documentary is about. But I feel like even despite the documentary that they saw, which supposedly be, you know, eye-opening, it didn't do justice what it was supposed to do. Like, sometimes I feel like people should just go to these communities as a field trip and see what has happened.
Yes, yes, I totally agree.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, like I was saying before, you know, that this revitalization has, you know, been a blessing in disguise, and not saying that it has eradicated like the community as a whole, but I feel like it's built up the community, even though the neighborhood that I knew as a kid, the red brick buildings have died. It's still in a process of rebirth, you know?
Yeah.
So what do you feel are the best strategies? The best strategies for reducing crime and improving public safety?
Trust your officers, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trust the people that around you. As a community, discuss what changes, or just talk it out.
Mm-hmm. Any other?
Educate the young people about the police powers and the laws. I'd educate the parents too.
Yeah,
because that's their kids, that's their babies, you know, get into trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also talk to the teachers about the same issue as well, right? Get like assemblies. Have assemblies around this, because you know the kids...
They don't have those anymore.
They should.
Yeah, they should.
They should have like parents involved and the kids at the exact same time.
And maybe a reliable cop.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And CP24, so they can get the true story unedited.
Mm-hmm. So we are all out of time for our show. We thank our panel for joining us today. Come back next week at the same time, same place, for another edition of Catch the Flavor Youth Radio here on Radio Region. Stay tuned, because coming up next is Murphy Brown, which you don't want to miss, right after our musical break.